Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Bhutang dhammang sangkhang namasami. Today is Christmas Eve, as well as our weekly lunar observance day. This is a time of year for Westerners. Yeah, I think for many Westerners, it's a very important time of year. A lot of very cherished memories that we associate with this time of year. And quite frankly, it's something that when I think many of us think of Christmas, we think of, to a greater or lesser extent, somewhat noble sentiments. This is conditioned by all sorts of things, but say in my own case, I remember very clearly growing up and just having some very wonderful experiences, both at church, coming together with a group of people, singing hymns, and basically reflecting on. Well, really, one of the things that I was really raised to reflect on a lot was how fortunate my life was and how many people had it much worse than myself. As well as many of the Christmas television shows, I'm actually very conscious of some very positive conditioning I've received from different Christmas TV shows. Different ones come to mind. There's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. In particular, there's one, cannot be overstated, in fact. I forget the name of the cartoon, but it was, I think it was an Oscar Wilde story, which was made into a cartoon, something about some golden statue that overlooked a European town, and some bird that befriended this statue, and this statue was very tall, and it was very beautiful and visible from all points in the village. And this statue could see all the suffering in the village and all the poverty and the poor people. And he would ask the bird to take a strip of gold off his coating and deliver it to this poor person or that kind of lame person and so forth. And this would have me in tears, quite predictably, every time I watched this show. And honest to goodness, this I think quite had somewhat of a significant effect on my development as a child. But of course, I think one of the main things that comes to mind for many people in the West is Christmas is a time of giving, time of sharing gifts. And this is something Westerners, compared to a country like Thailand, we're not very adept at. We don't really give very graciously, and it's something that doesn't come very natural to us, except at Christmas time. It seems to come easier for some reason. So I thought maybe today would be an opportunity to just say have a few reflections on generosity and some thoughts around this very important part of our development. Today on Alms Round, in the car, I was telling a story that I heard from Lungpa Sumedho, and it's a wonderful story, and maybe it's worth repeating here. Lungpa Sumedho was on Bindabat somewhere in England, and a mother had a small child in her arms, I think maybe 2 or 3 years old, quite a small child, and she saw Ajahn Sumedho on Bindabat or something like this, and she went up to Ajahn Sumedho, and she had a bag of goodies, and she wanted to make an offering on alms round, and so Lungpa Sumedho kind of opens up his bowl, and the mother has this small child in her arm, and this child has a candy bar, and so first the mother kind of puts in her apple or whatever it is, and then she looks at the child in her arms and says, and kind of just looks sort of inquisitively, as if to say, "Well, are you gonna give your candy bar to Lungpa Sumedho?" And the way that the story was related was this child, this small child, went into a tremendous sort of battle with himself as to whether or not he should give this chocolate bar. And he said you could see the child kind of look up at his mother and then look at Lungpa Sumedho and put his hand into the bowl and then kind of pull it out again. And kind of doubting, not really sure if he would do it. Then he kind of looked up at his mother again and then looked at Ajahn Sumedho and couldn't quite make up his mind. And the mother just kind of patiently observed, didn't kind of force anything. And then finally the child just kind of thrusts the hand into the bowl and lets go of the chocolate bar and then kind of squeals with delight. And Ajahn Sumedho, just the way he, one of the words he used was, children are so guileless. And they're just so naked in their, what's going on inside them. And that's a very beautiful story, and I think there's lots to reflect on there, actually. So for starters, the first thing that comes to my mind, the way that this story came to me and the way it's in my mind, is the behavior of the mother. She didn't tell the child, put the chocolate bar in the monk's bowl now. She didn't say that, and she didn't sort of tell the child to do something. But she just provided space for the child to work out what the best thing to do is. She provided space and probably a certain sort of sense of unspoken direction, in the sense that, it's a wonderful thing to do. And it feels very delightful. But there was no kind of coercion or kind of forcing the child to do something. And I just think, when I think about this story, with anybody who's going through a moral battle, their own moral battles, whether it's ourselves or other people, it's so important to encounter that sort of struggle in others with spaciousness. In order for there to be a real, say, victory on this level, things really have to be worked out within the individual. And whether it's, say, a decision to give a chocolate bar or not, or to say to accept a job, some kind of job offer, or not to accept it, or to take up a practice of some kind, a meditation practice. All the countless different sort of battles, moral battles that we have to fight within ourselves. There are things that we have to work out for ourselves. And you can just think, if the mother kind of had told the child to put the chocolate bar into Ajahn Sumedho's bowl, and he did it dutifully, kind of just obeying his mother, what a completely different experience that would have been for the child. I think of that, I think of something like that, and that can be quite a powerful, that must have been quite a powerful experience for that little child. Also, we speak about the merit, making merit in Buddhism, and how generosity is an act of merit, how giving is something that leads to happiness. And if you imagine that scene of the little child putting the chocolate bar into the bowl and then squealing with delight afterwards, it strikes me as a very sort of bare expression of the delight of giving. Because you can just imagine the sort of happy pride and the kind of radiance and how that would just kind of, you know, exude and kind of express itself through the child's eyes and the kind of smile on his face and just his whole aura, the energy. Just how visible that sort of delight would have been. And it makes me think, okay, so you think about, like the Buddha says, there's two kinds of happiness in the world. There's the happiness of renunciation, and there's the happiness of sensuality. And the happiness of renunciation is the higher of the two. And I just think of that scene, and I think of the just on the pure pleasure level for that child, the quality of pleasure that he got from giving that chocolate bar compared to the quality of pleasure that would have been available through, say, having kept the chocolate bar and eaten it. And if you compare that, it's probably a hands-down contest. It'd be no comparison. I think also now these days, just at tea time, I was talking with Bank, one of the Thai laymen staying here. And he was saying how in Thailand, there's kind of a movement more and more, not surprisingly, away from the superstitious brand of Buddhism, say, that characterized generations previous, towards, you know, a greater understanding of what the Buddhist teachings actually are, and who can fault this? This is a wonderful thing, to the extent that it's true. But I think there's a danger of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, in the sense that giving can easily be seen as from the pragmatic perspective. And Westerners, or the modern mind, I think, will do this very easily. For example, it starts contemplating, well, wait a minute, now what am I giving? And what's the result actually for the recipient? And in what way is it good and bad and so forth? And that's surely, I mean, how can you blame that? I mean, that's a step forward to just blind giving, for instance, giving something that may have detrimental effects to the receiver, or just not paying any attention to it or anything like that. But I think at the same time, it can be missing the point. And I'd just like to point, again, this image of this child giving the chocolate bar. Think if the child, sort of, just as he was about to give, sort of started thinking, now, is this going to be good for Ajahn Sumedho's teeth? And then he said, no, maybe it wouldn't be actually such a... Maybe it's not the best thing to give to Ajahn Sumedho. Maybe he has already got a chocolate bar and he doesn't need this one. Or whatever. And maybe that's true, you know, sure. Maybe Ajahn Sumedho has bad teeth, or maybe he doesn't need another chocolate bar, or maybe he doesn't like chocolate bars at all. But if you just think about the moral victory for the child in giving, and to me this is what giving, I think, on one level is just so much about. It's about overcoming the resistance in oneself to give. And it's not so much about, this is on one level of the path. It's not about, say, giving to the Sangha so that the Sangha has food to eat, or giving for sort of helping on the external level, although those may be kind of side benefits to it. But it's about overcoming the attachment within oneself to what one is giving. The closeness of heart that simply wants to just stay closed with the familiar and the comfortable and not open itself and go forth and give something of itself to the recipient, to really give something of itself. There's been a few times here over the past few weeks I've given some guided meditations, and I've always, so far, the ones I've given, I've always started them off with a Buddha Nusati, where I contemplate the Buddha for a few minutes, have a few reflections on the Buddha. And I do that as a way in my own practice to really inspire and brighten the heart before I begin either samatha or vipassana. But there is another meditation that the Buddha recommends, and he calls it Jaganusati. And Jaganusati is one of the recollections that he recommended, which includes recollection of the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, recollection of death, there's a few others. But included in this list is Jaganusati, recollection of one's own generosity. And the way this is described in, I think this is in the Visuddhimagga, I'm not sure where this is in the canon, but it's described as one thinks to oneself, how fortunate, how wonderful, that amidst a world which, how is it phrased? Something like, in a world where everyone is closed-fisted, I live with an open fist. I live delighting in generosity, delighting in relinquishment, and then to reflect on how fortunate one is that one has that quality. And that is a very powerful reflection to reflect on the various things that one has done in terms of giving. One has given this, one has given that. I found also another way to make this more real for myself, and this is also useful if, let's say, you're somebody who hasn't given much, and perhaps you don't feel like you're a very generous person, never have been, and you're not generous now, and you don't know how to proceed. As a preliminary meditation practice, to sit down and just imagine yourself giving something, especially to someone that you really respect and admire, a teacher or a friend that you really look up to just imagine yourself being in the presence of that person. And for me, I always imagine my arms going out with something in my hand. My hand opens and I say, this is for you. You know, I want you to have this. And just to experiment with that, you know, just kind of imagine that in your mind. I want you to have this. And the feeling that comes up from that is just a tremendous sense of brightness and a sense of energy kind of rising up within you and going out into the world. I think that's a really good reflection, because generosity is something that when you're stuck, and we've all been there, when you're stuck in that world of selfishness and the heart is closed and you don't want to share what you have, you just want to keep it all for yourself, your possessions, your little kind of sensual delights, you just want to keep it all to yourself. That feels terrible, but often you just don't know how to get out of it. You just can't, you don't want to get out of it, and that's part of the problem. And you can kind of threaten yourself, you know, the Christmas Carol, what was that, the Ghost of Christmas Future and Past, and just threaten yourself with threats of being a miserable person, but that may not work, actually. And I think it's very beneficial to really just imagine yourself giving something. And then you can imagine yourself giving something to a whole variety of people. And that, you know, this person that you really respect, and then there's that person you really respect, and there's that person you admire, and you're going to give something to everybody. You can really, you know, frankly, you can really get carried away with this meditation. It's absolutely blissful. And you can turn it into an entire hour-long meditation. And I've even gotten, sometimes you can get to a point where you just repeat as a mantra, giving, 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 giving. And you just feel like, what else is there in this world that I can give? Is there anything? Just let me give something. And you can imagine what it would be like for a deva. They say that generosity is one of the causes to be reborn in certain heaven realms. And it's this sort of reflection that can kind of help you see that, what it must be like just almost be constantly looking for something to give. It's just, what can I give? What can I give? I have a feeling that this sort of reflection or meditation is easier when you don't own anything, because you've already given up your possessions, and there's actually very little. You've given away just about either literally everything you have or almost everything you have. And you're not threatened by, like, giving away the last thing you own is something that's actually within the grasp of a renunciant. It's not for a layperson, not in a responsible sense. Again, simply because if you have a family, of course you can't give away everything you have. But I think you can tap into that beauty and just sheer loveliness of the heart that wants to give. You can see how, from another perspective or another take on this, is how giving is related to empathy and compassion. In that, in compassion, you're not necessarily giving anything material or even perhaps nothing directly to the person at all, but you're trying to put yourself in the other person's shoes. And I think one of the qualitative feel of compassion is the sense that you would like to give something to that person, somebody who's suffering, who's sad, who's in sorrow, who's in pain, and you would like to relieve that person of that experience, but you can't. And if you could, you would, but you know you can't. So there is simply an openness of heart towards that dimension of being, if you will, towards that person, that state of being, that reality. Just this sort of attunement to the suffering of other people. And this is more profound than giving. It's a more a deeper emotion, I think, than simply wanting to give. Just giving on one level is more like loving kindness. You just want to give and you want people to be happy. And wanting people to be happy, that's what we call metta. You want people to be happy. But wanting people to be free of suffering is something else. That's what we call karuna or compassion. And they're based on the same principle of, in Buddhism, we develop these qualities towards all sentient beings, friends, enemies, neutral people, whoever. And it's based on the ability to put yourself in the other person's shoes. And that's amazingly difficult to do, I think. And it's something that you can endlessly refine. For instance, you know, no matter how empathetic you are, or how compassionate you are, or how much you can imagine yourself in somebody else's shoes, you could always do it a bit better, actually. And I think we should always, it's one of those goals that we should hope never to fully achieve. We should always assume that there's something more to a person's experience than we can imagine. That goes without saying, perhaps, but certainly the case. And it's that compassion, or that ability to get outside of our own little story, our own little world, and remember that this universe is not as pretty as our own small little bubble would have us believe. We live in very, even those of us who are struggling the most, say in this room or in this state. I mean, I just think how once you've been to Asia, India in particular, it just completely opens your eyes as to what human suffering can be. So that's a disturbing image in some sense. Compassion involves, you know, very much, it involves suffering, the suffering of other beings. And if you reflect on it long enough and hard enough, you start to feel it's a bit unacceptable. What I mean by that is not that you have to not accept people's suffering, but what I mean is life as it's usually lived by most of us, most of the time, in a world where there's as much suffering as there is, that's unacceptable. And that's worthy of revolting against and refusing to accept that reality. Actually, it's hard to describe. That doesn't sound quite very spiritual, refusing to accept that reality. But I think you know what I mean. It's refusing to accept, to allow our lives to just carry on blindly and just kind of carry on the way that we've been living when we can sense and intuit and perceive how broad and deep the suffering is, both in the world as well as in our own hearts, which we develop ever-increasing sensitivity to. So these different sort of qualities of the heart that are also wholesome and mutually supportive, some of them are just very close to each other. I've mentioned here before how in my own experience, say, generosity generosity and gratitude are very, very close together. So when you do, say, gratitude meditations, which is another form of meditation which you can consciously develop, it's pretty easy. You just think of something you have gratitude for and focus on it. That's almost the feeling of gratitude is almost it's almost indistinguishable in my experience from a feeling of wanting to give. You're just so grateful, and this there's this outpouring energy that just wants to respond and give. And that quality of giving, just because it's tuning oneself to other beings' needs, or just other beings in general, it's very close to compassion. So the Buddha says that the highest form of giving is the giving of Dhamma. And that's something to reflect on. The highest form of giving is the giving of Dhamma. What the way that we can take that, or what the way that we can use that, is learning to think about our relationships, beings that are, that live in our the in our worlds, and at least as a starter, to bring truth into the relationship. Truth, you would think, is simply the default position in relationships, but that's not the case. And it's all too often that our relationships are mired in a sort of hypocrisy, saying the easy thing instead of the honest thing. A kind of basically a way of relating that isn't authentic and straightforward. And we can think of bringing truth into that relationship as a form of generosity. It's something that you can give another person, is simply the truth of who you are. And it should never be underestimated, the power of that. So for monastics, this is often a thing, how as you gain more years in the robes, there starts to get this sort of teacher's anxiety, kind of this dread over the fact that you have to start giving talks one day. I had this for many, many years. And I think it's just so important that whether we're monastics or whatever our station in life, we don't have to be anything other than what we are. And that's always the case. And whenever we feel the pressure to be something for other people, we've left the dimension of our deepest spiritual search, which is really just to uncover what we really are. And the different sort of, say, insecurities or problems or challenges that we have in our life, we never need to be ashamed of them, because it's what we are. And to be able to bring that into your relationships is what makes relationships relationships. It's what that's really relating to somebody or something, is through being what you are in that relationship. And that's something, in this world, I'm not sure, but certainly the world that I grew up in, just the culture, the environment in which I was raised, the culture, there seemed to be a lot of authenticity which wasn't there. And it caused tremendous confusion. And it would have been so much, you know, healthier for everybody if there was just more honesty. It was given and shared. But we can also take this word, say, giving of Dhamma, I think, on the highest level, it actually does mean to be sharing the words of the Buddha. And this is something that I think in order to be able to do that, not so much to share the words of the Buddha, to be able to share the insight of the Buddha. Of course, why is that the highest giving? Well, that's the highest object, is enlightenment or nibbana. And how could it be otherwise that that's not the highest form of giving? But if we are going to share that, if we are going to teach that or bring that into our life and share it with others, we first have to take it upon ourselves to realize that. To be able to think that you're going to share Dhamma without having realized it is there's a lot of misunderstanding there, I think, and a lot of danger. And I think a teacher has a tremendous responsibility. Whenever you're going to think you're going to be helping other people, I mean, how much suffering has been wrought by people thinking they're going to help someone else? Just sort of, I think I know what's good for you, and I'm going to help you. That's something I don't trust for a minute. But what I do trust is I trust the Buddha's teachings, and I trust that to open ourselves to the Buddha's teachings and to be conditioned by them, to let ourselves be conditioned by what the Buddha taught, that is what is going to lead us to the highest happiness, to the highest state of fulfillment. There's a passage in the suttas, a well-known passage, where somebody asks the Buddha and says, how is it that truth is preserved? How does a person preserve the truth? And it's an interesting question. It's quite a remarkable question, actually. And the Buddha says, I'll simplify a little bit, but he says, the truth is preserved when a being who has faith in something doesn't say, this is true and everything else is false, but rather he preserves truth when he says, my faith is such and such. And then he says the same thing, not just for faith, he also says it for reason, say logic. Just because a person has a good argument, he doesn't therefore say this is true. He says, my argument leads me to conclude such and such is true. That is preserving the truth. Or when somebody has a preference for something, they don't therefore say this is true, but rather they say that my preference for such and such a teaching is such and such. And in this way, does a person preserve the truth? So, and that takes strength. That takes the ability to, when you're not sure of something, to be able to say that you're not sure. You don't want to just try and convince other people of something that you feel totally confident in. Unless you've seen it on a very, very deep level and have overcome doubts in that with regard to it. So I think if we want to be able to get to a point where we can give what is highest, then we have to study and practice what leads to that. And that's something that we have. That's an opportunity that we all have to do. And that's something, it's a tremendous privilege. And it's my faith, very strong faith, that this is a privilege that we've paid for very dearly, for lifetimes, for an opportunity like this. and that very, very many people don't have that opportunity. And we may not have it again for a very long time. And that's something that's interesting to sit on and contemplate. Just suppose that's true. Really take it seriously. Suppose that the encounter with these teachings really are that rare. You know, suppose it's you come across these once in thousands of lifetimes. That's hard to take. That's hard. That number is so big. It's hard to really grasp. But it's worth trying. We have to think about these things, think about life in such a way that we really appreciate what we have, the opportunity that we have, and find ways to overcome the complacency and the taking for granted of the opportunities that are just afforded us again and again, and we just let them slip through our fingers. How long do we think that we can go on like that for? We shouldn't think that this kind of opportunity will be with us forever. And I don't think that there's any kind of objective state that we have to attain to. But what I do think is that if we want to stay within this realm of this kind of opportunity, then we have to sincerely try. And if we don't, we will stray from this path. And that only makes sense. And that's only fair. It's totally reasonable, and it's totally sensible, and it's totally fair. And it should be not a concern. It should be it should instill in us a sense of urgency. And if it doesn't, then ask yourself, why not? You know, if it doesn't instill a sense of urgency, then you haven't thought it through thoroughly enough, I'd like to propose. So I think it's now 9:44, and maybe it's time to draw this to a conclusion. Generosity is something that everybody can work on and practice. And even if the precepts seem totally kind of inaccessible, even if it's like you can't keep the 5 precepts, you can't keep 3 of the precepts, well, what you can do is from time to time you can strive, you can give. You can start with something small. But notice the things that kind of brighten the heart. Giving, spontaneous giving, is more delightful than planned giving. When you can just give something. Giving to somebody who you deeply respect and admire is more rewarding than to someone you don't. And this giving, the Buddha says this is part of the path. It's something we can develop. It's something we can take an interest in, reflect on it, and let it brighten the heart and brighten our lives. And if we reflect on it thoroughly enough and deeply enough, we'll realize that I think the whole of the path can be summed and caught up in generosity. In the way that it relates to suffering, that it relates to other, the way that it brings people together, makes you aware of the suffering of the world. It makes you want to do something. It makes you want to do something profound and meaningful. And that makes you want to study and practice the teachings. and realize them now so that you can share it with others in an honest and meaningful and helpful way. So I'll end that talk at this point.